Okay. We're holding the last two words of Chess Summit Bays. To recap where we're standing from yesterday, the Mishnah had talked about that there's a difference between Nedarim and Nedavos, that Nedarim tend to be something that's made by Rishoyim, by people who are careless with these things. Nedavos are things that are done by Ksherim. We said, we mentioned there's Machloikus from Meir and Rabbi Huda about the explanation of a couple of psukim in Kehelas, which, by the way, when I sort of muddled this when I was explaining it yesterday, so to explain it a little more clearly, the pasuk mentions two possibilities. One is a person who makes a neder and doesn't keep it, which obviously is a bad thing. Another one is somebody who doesn't make a neder at all. So that's only two of the three possibilities. There's a third possibility that you're going to make a neder and keep it. And the pasuk says, "Eis shatider shalim." Whatever you make a neder, you should keep. So the question is, what is the pasuk saying? Is the pasuk saying that the best thing? We know obviously the worst thing is to make a neder and not keep it. What's the best? Is it not to make a neder at all, or is it to make a neder and keep it? That was the machlokes from Meir and Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Meir had said the best thing, you're better off not making a neder at all. That's what the pasuk means. And Rabbi Huda had said no. What the pasuk means is that you're better off, the best thing would be to make a neder and keep it. So we were trying to figure out how that fits with our Mishnah, that makes a difference between neder and nedavah. Neither of them seem to be drawing that distinction. So we said one possibility was the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Meir because Rabbi Meir might say that there's a problem making nedarim, but he won't have a problem with nedavah. And why? Because nedavos are things that are made by ksherim, as in the example of with a korban, the example of how Hillel did it, and with nezirus, the example of that younger man from Shimon HaTzadik's time. So now we're going to go through the other possibility that maybe our Mishnah instead fits with Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, where Rabbi Yehuda says that the best thing of all actually is to make a neder and keep it. So then the question is, well, if the best thing is to make a neder, what do you mean that the Mishnah is calling it nidrei rishayim? That's where we're holding then. So another possibility you could say, after the Tamer of Yehuda, you could even say that our Mishnah goes rather according to Rabbi Yehuda, because ki amar Rabbi Yehuda b'nedava b'neder loy amar, because there it's the other way around. We would say, just like we said before, we wanted to say that Rabbi Meir would say you shouldn't make a neder, but he has no problem making a nedava. He has no problem with you making an adava. Rabbi Yehuda might be saying something similar. When Rabbi Yehuda is saying the best thing is to make a neder and keep it, he doesn't mean a neder, he means an adava. The best thing is to make an adava and keep it. And then... similar to what we said yesterday. I mean, in the case of Karbanos, there's a real actual difference whether you're declaring the chiyuv is on yourself or whether the chiyuv is on this particular animal, basically. And in the case of Nazir, it's similar to what we said yesterday, that you do the Nazir in a way that demonstrates that you're doing it L'Shem Shemayim, like the story with Shimon HaTzadik. Question is, what do you mean? Rakatani Tov Mizeh Mizeh Nader Makayim. He clearly says in the Braisa that the Nader Makayim. He clearly says in the Braisa that even better than making a Nader and not keeping it, or even better than not making a Nader, is to make a Nader and keep it. So he clearly uses the word Nader.
Rabbi Yehuda.
Okay, the answer is Tani Nodir Makayim. Again, just like we said yesterday, our Mishnah used the word Nodar when it meant Nodav. Similarly, in the Braisa over there, Rabbi Yehuda might be using the word Nodir where really he means Nodiv. Okay, the question is, again, similar to yesterday, Maishna Nodir Deloy. So what's the problem with being Nodir, with making a Nodir, that Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't want you to be doing that during the Asibola de Takala? Because, as we said yesterday, you could come to Takala. In the case of a korban, you might end up with a Baal Ta'acha, you might end up using it, etc. What? That what? I mean, it's not. I don't know. That's necessarily a nafkamina in halacha, right? I mean, well, there is. I mean, the actual halacha in Shulchan Aruch is paskin like Rav Meir. That the better thing is not to make nedarim at all. But again, there's a difference between neder and nedava. I mean, Shulchan Aruch doesn't really talk about neder versus nedava because nowadays that's not really negaya. We don't have karbanos now. I mean, we don't have nezirus now. But yeah. It doesn't really matter. I mean, you still need to have people live by shopping. So if you intended to say, you know, if you intended to say bli neder, then I mean, you're not finishing what you're saying until you finish off with the word bli neder. So yeah.
So what do you say when you say bli neder?
No, the question was just, should you say bli neder that I will do such and such, or I will do such and such bli neder? The pashas doesn't make a difference. Okay. Anyway, so. like so similar to the question yesterday, what are we saying? Rabbi Yehuda has a problem with you making nedarim, and the reason logically would be because nedarim there's more of a chance of takala that you might end up falling through. Nedava nami doma asi the takala, a nedava also you might have a problem as well. And the answer is Rabbi Yehuda lo taimei. Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his svara that in fact that you can do nedava with karbanos similar to what we said yesterday that Hillel did. Just the reason why we're not mentioning Hillel over here, we're just mentioning Rabbi Yehuda, is because since we're talking about Rabbi Yehuda, we have an explicit thing where Rabbi Yehuda himself says the Svara. Another explicit Braisa where Rabbi Yehuda himself mentions the Svara. Right. We said yesterday that Hillel did this, but what we're saying is, now that we're talking to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda himself explicitly says in a Braisa that this is the right thing to do, then we might as well. It all fits together. Because Rabbi Yehuda says, maybe Adam kivsos el azara, a person can bring his lamb or whatever kind of animal to the azara, or makdisha, and there he can declare it hektish, and do smichan it, and shecht it right then and there. Which again, it's to say, be the same discussion between the Rishonim as we discussed yesterday. Does it mean that he actually is makdish it right outside the azara, because otherwise you have the problem of bringing cholin in, or is it that he can even be makdish it in the azara because it's part of the process of bringing the cholin? That's according to the opinion that it's right outside. Which is the Ram, then yeah, it would mean, but he's standing right outside the gate, so there's no real possibility that he's gonna turn around. Yeah. Okay. Tainach nedava de korbanos. Fine. That. Takes care of the case of nedava of korbanos. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say the best thing, even better than not making a neder, is to make a nedava and bring it. Because in the case of korbanos, you can do that. Nedava nezirus ma'ikal meima. What do you say about the nedava of nezirus? And again, here the Gemara could have answered same as we did yesterday, the story with Shimon HaTzadik. But again, since we have a braisa where Rabbi Yehuda himself addresses this issue, then we bring that in instead. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda l'taymei, Rabbi Yehuda goes according to his own svara. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda omer, Chassidim horishonim hayu mis'avin l'havi korban chatas. The early Chassidim used to have a desire to bring a korban chatas. They wanted to have, at one time or another, they wanted to have the chance to bring every kind of korban. So an ola, or shlamim, or mincha, or a toida, you can do voluntarily, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute. A chatas or an asham, you can't. So actually, an asham, the reason why the Gemara doesn't mention an asham, we talked the other day about the concept, there was an opinion in Masechta Krisus that you can bring an asham toloi, even if you don't, just ala sof, because you might have done something
but
wrong.
The toloi you have to bring.
So, no, but the point is that therefore, so there is a way to bring an asham toloi on your own, basically, without specifically having to do anything that triggers an asham. We talked about that the other day, that Baruch Ben Butcher used to do this. But a chatas seems to be the only one out. You have no way voluntarily of bringing the carbon chatas.
Why would you bring an asham if some talui, if really you don't need it?
So that's the thing. These chassidim or rishonim were concerned every day, what if yesterday I did something that might have made me chayav chatas? I don't know for sure, but maybe I have a suffix in my mind whether I did, and therefore they would bring an asham talui. So fine, so they've taken care of most of the kinds of korbanos. What would they do as far as chatas, though? That you can't bring a chatas voluntarily. And the Rashi, the Mefarish, says over here that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu Einu Mevi Takala Al Yideim Shel Tzadikim, the famous expression throughout Shas, that Hashem doesn't allow Tzadikim to stumble and do something by mistake that would trigger a korban chatas. So what would they do? Actually, the Gemara says it right here. L'fishein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mevi Takala Al Yideim. So the Eibishter doesn't bring any stumbling block through them, so therefore they had no way of bringing chatas. Mahayu oisin. So what would they do? Omdinimus nadvin nezirus lamakim. They would go and voluntarily declare a nezirus to the Eibishter. Kadeshi is chayav korban chatas lamakim. That way, what happens at the end of their term of nezirus? We said yesterday they have to bring a chatas, a shlamim, a chatas, an oila, a chatas, and a shlamim. So there you go. They have an opportunity to bring a chatas. Comes from the word chet, right, which means a sin. So
why
usually
is that
it's we'll talk about a little bit soon why a nazir has to bring a chatas. I mean, ultimately that's the way the Torah says it. But we'll talk about logical reasons behind it soon.
But ultimately
there's a chatas. The point is though that this way they had an opportunity to bring a chatas. it's an interesting thing, by the way. If you look in Nusach Ashkenaz Siddurim and some Nusach Sfarad Siddurim, where we say every morning everybody says the parasha of the Tomid, the B'nai Yisrael. In some Nuschos they also say the parashias of the various kinds of korbanos, the Ova and the Shlomim and the Chatos and so forth. And after each one of them, there's a one or two line Yehirot. We don't say the Shlomim one every day. At the end, right before Ezer Mekoyman, we say over there, Ribon Ha'olamim, at Tzivisanu, where we list over there all the Korbanos. Those are total Olah L'mincha L'chatos. But we don't say the individual parashiyos of them. In some Siddurim, they have the individual parashiyos of them, and after each one, there's a one line thing. You eat up then, Kilui Kravti Olah, or Shlomim, or what have you. So they have a bit of a discussion about what about when you say the chatas one? Should you say you eat up and Kilui Kravti Chatos? We see from all Gemara, you can't voluntarily bring the chatas, so maybe you shouldn't. And they have a considerable discussion about this whole business. We say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't allow tzaddikim to stumble. What about, Tosfos mentions in a few places in Shas that rule only applies to macholes asuras, only to foods that are also to eat, because Tosfos says in a few places, it's a gnai, it's a shame for a Talmid Chacham that his body should be made up out of, that something in his body should be made up out of today for food. But other kinds of things, not. So they could have wound up in a situation where they wind up having to bring a chatas for some other reason. Why are we saying that davka they would have to declare nazirus to do that? There's a variety of different answers, including that there's a difference between tzaddikim and chassidim. Maybe chassidim are on an even higher level than that, and therefore they're protected
higher
than tzaddikim. So tzaddikim may not
could have
tzaddikim, yeah. In a certain sense, because a chassid, a tzaddik is somebody who does according to halacha. A chassid is somebody who goes lifnei mishurat hadin, somebody who goes beyond the letter of the law. What? Chassidim rishonim. Yeah, that's another answer. The chassidim rishonim were on a higher level, so therefore they'd be protected against all kinds of nevarious. Maybe the chassidim of later generations weren't. Okay, whatever. Anyway. So they make a nazir. So there we have. So Rabbi Yehuda himself is saying that it's a good thing to become a nazir in certain cases. So that's the type of thing that he's talking about. Reb Shimon Omer continues the Braisa. Reb Shimon says, "Lo nadru b'nazir." No, they didn't make a nazirus in order to be able to bring a chatas. If they didn't have a chance to bring a chatas, they just they'd have to live without it. Ella haroitz lahavi ola. If somebody voluntarily wants to bring an ola, it's not a maybe. You can voluntarily declare an ola and bring it. Shlomim, it's not a maybe.
Without, because ola
isn't specifically tied to chet. Yeah. I mean, an ola can be for a chet. One of the purposes a person might bring a korban ola is if they had machshavas of averus, if they had thoughts of avera. But it's not something that you're required to, and a person could bring an ola purely voluntarily. A shlomim, same thing. Toda v'abah min alachma, similarly, if a person wants to bring a toda along with the four types of bread that go with it, three types of matzahs and one type of chametz, then also misnadav maybe you're able to voluntarily bring that. Avav Nazirus, Lois Nadru, but Rav Shem says, no, not like you, Rav Yehuda, are saying that they would declare Nazirus just to have the chance to bring a chatas. They wouldn't declare Nazirus. Kadesh lo yikaru choytin, in order that they won't be called sinners. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, by a Nazir who became Tomei, v'chiper olav masha chata ala nafesh, that the Kohen should make a kapara for him, for the fact that he sinned on a soul, which as the Gemara is going to say soon. So we're going to talk about soon that the Gemara is going to flush it out according to Rabbi Elazar HaKapper, that there's an opinion that a nazir b'chal is that a person who becomes a nazir is committing a type of avera by doing that. I mean, the Torah gives him the option to do it. The Torah gives a person a chance ishti yakli, but it's something maybe you have to do in extreme circumstances, like the case of Shimon HaTzadik's nazir that we discussed yesterday. But it's not. Ordinarily, it's not considered a good thing. So if Shimon is saying, you're saying the Chassidim or Rishonim would just out of the blue declare, I want to be a Nazir just to have a chance to bring a korban, that's not a valid reason to become a Nazir. That's actually, you still have the problem of Chet. There's a problem being a Nazir itself involves a certain sin, the fact that you're denying yourself certain things of Olam Hazeh. The famous Yerushalmi at the end of Kiddushin that says that lost in love, a person is going to be brought to account in front of the Beis Din Shamayla for everything that he saw that he could have enjoyed in Shem Shemayim, of course, and didn't. So therefore, there's the idea like a person, and up to Chassidus, we can understand this fairly easily. I mean, Nesava HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael Yidivu Tachtonim, maybe she wants us to take the world and to take out the things of the world and use them for Elokus. The idea is not to withdraw from them. The idea is to use them in the proper way. So fine, you have a person like the guy over there with Shimon HaTzadik who realizes that he's about to run off the rails, so he has no choice but to become a nazir. But we're still saying that according to Shimon, there's a certain negativity to it. It would have been better if you hadn't had to do that in the first place. Would be.
We're saying that we're supposed to minimize enjoyment in this world.
No, but we're supposed to use the things of this world. We're not necessarily supposed to enjoy them per se, but we're supposed to use them. We're not supposed to withdraw from them and use them in a way and use them for Avodas Hashem.
But you don't have to have
Gashmius Tikhanal from them. But you still make use of them. You don't withdraw from them. You don't say these are off limits. I mean, obviously things that the Torah itself puts off limits, then fine.
But there's a fine line between not enjoying them and not withdrawing from.
Okay, I mean we learned at the end of Ksubas. We talked about near the end of Ksubas about Rabbeinu HaKadosh that he had all the great delicacies on his table all the time. He had even vegetables out of season and everything. And yet at the end of his life, he lifts up his fingers and says, "I didn't have hana with even my little finger." Why? Because it explains the Tanya. Because he had everything that he ate was purely l'shem shemayim without any thought of gashmius hana at all. That's the idea.
Could be the Shem Shemayim and still derive
that
one from
what's inferior. To the extent that a person is feeling gashmiistic of pleasure, that their body is feeling pleasure from it. To that extent, it's being used for that rather than to help the nefesh of the kiss and you know. Okay, I mean whatever. It's a long discussion. Yeah, and there is. I mean you know there's the famous thing it says in Hayom Yom that when the went to the Alter Rebbe that the first thing they learned was what's mitornish terminish what's memegdashnish that you know what's not allowed up Torah is for sure off limits. Even the things that you need, even the things that you allowed, you don't have to have. You know, control yourself with them. But so there's that. I mean, that's at the beginning of Avodah. You need that. But ultimately, you should reach the point where you are able to use them for the right purposes. So whatever. Reb Shimon is saying that the fact that you're denying yourself the various things that a nazir has to stay away from is a certain degree of chet. And that's what he's saying. Therefore, that's not a good thing to do.
Slight contradiction with what Chassidus says, that there is a mile and not to doubt.
But it all depends what level you're on. Ideally, what you do is, rather than having to take on Nazirus and you're staying away from wine, the idea is go and drink the wine, but you're not doing it as, oh, I have wine to drink, I'm enjoying it, but rather because it helps you. It also talks about in the Vinatanya, Chamr Vereshni Pachin, that the wine and the good spices open up your mind and help you learn better. I help you to help you serve Asia better. Whatever. It's okay. Anyway, so Reb Shimon is saying that unlike Reb Yehuda, that it's not a good thing to be a Nazir. Think about points out. Amar Abaya, Shimon HaTzadik, Reb Shimon, Reb Elazar HaKapper, Kulan Shita Achasein. We have three different Tanoim who all have a very similar Shita. The Nazir Choyta Avi, that a Nazir is actually a type of sinner. The fact that he declared Nazirus. It's not identical, but each of them comes at a different angle, which is why usually the Gemara's expression for this kind of thing would be Omru Dover Echad, that all these various Tanaim said the same thing. Here it's not they didn't say the same thing, because we'll talk about they're actually talking about it coming at it from different angles, but each one of them has a certain negative view of a Nazir. Namely, Shimon HaTzadik with Shimon HaDamar. In the case of Shimon HaTzadik we had yesterday, that he generally would not eat from the korban of a nazir who became tamei because of the concern that the nazir may have regretted during his nazirus that he ever started it. Reb Shimon, we just said that he thinks that it's not good to become a nazir, that the Chassidim or Rishonim would not declare nazirus because they didn't want to be called chaytin. Rabbi Elazar HaKapper B'Rebbe, where do we see that Rabbi Elazar HaKapper B'Rebbe? B'Rebbe, by the way, doesn't mean the son of Rebbe. In most places in Shas, it means the great Talmud Chacham of his times. Anyway, where do we see that he says that? Tanya, it says in Ebraisa, we learned this in Tainus. Rabbi Elazar HaKapper B'Rebbe, Omer. When the Pasuk says, V'chipper Olav Ma'ashachot Al HaNafesh, it says that the Kohen makes kapara for the Nazir for the fact that he sinned on a soul. V'chi be'ezen nefesh chot azeh, what soul did he sin with? So, okay, the simple meaning, which the Gemara is going to say at the end, is that he sinned in the fact that he became Tomei. So now he sinned involving a soul, that he became Tomei with a dead body that once had a neshama in it, and now he needs kapara for that. But Rabbi Elazar Kapper is taking it differently. Ela zeshet seir atzmei min hayayin. No, he's saying the fact that he denied himself wine is considered a chet. V'haloi dvarim kal v'chomer. And now you have to figure, Rabbi Elazar Kapper says, you have to figure the kal v'chomer. U'ma zeshet seir atzmei elam min hayayin nikra chote. If somebody who we see is only denying himself wine, a nazir is already called a chote. Ha'am tzair atzmei called dover. If somebody denies himself everything, alachas kama v'kama, how much more so that it's not a good thing? Mikan, based on this, Rabbi Elazar Kapper says, kol ha'yoshev v'tainis nikra chote. If somebody fasts, then if somebody fasts voluntarily, then they're called a choyte. We learned in Tainus over there was a discussion back and forth about whether somebody who sits in a Tainus voluntarily, is he called a choyte, or on the contrary, maybe is he called a kodesh. The Gemara distinguished over there between whether you're able to hack it or whether you're not, you know, whether it interferes with your avodas Hashem or not. Yeah, okay. Anyway. So there you have three different Tanoim. So, okay, again, they're not saying exactly the same thing. Shimon HaTzadik's problem was with a Nazir who became Tomei partway through. We said yesterday he wouldn't necessarily have a problem with a Nazir who actually went straight through and didn't have any problems, whereas Shimon and Rabbi Elazar Kapper do. So it's not exactly the same thing, but it's a similar idea that all of them have some kind of problem with a Nazir. Okay, the question is, V'hadein Krub Nazir Tomei? According to Rabbi Shimon and according to Rabbi Elazar Kapper, how are you learning from this pasuk, which is talking about another tomei, and you're trying to generalize from it to all nazirim? Mele Shimon HaTzadik, very well. He specifically says that he wouldn't eat from the korban of another tomei because the pasuk is because of this pasuk. Well, not because of this pasuk, but you know it fits in. Kamash hachot al nafesh. The fact that he became tomei and now has to start over may make him regret things. But according to Reb Shimon and Reb Elazar Kapper, who are saying generically that any nazir is called a chote, why is the pasuk mentioning it only in connection with a nazir who became tamei? The answer is mishum d'shana b'chetu, because what he did is kind of a double chet at that point. There's number one, according to them, the fact that number one, he became a nazir, which according to them you shouldn't do, and number two, once he was a nazir already, the fact that he became tamei. Yeah, they would say yes, it applies across the board to nazirim. The pasuk is just specifically mentioning it by the case of a nazir tamei because by him already you have this extra factor. But it applies to other nazirim also. And the Rosh adds also that you have, again, the fact that he became Tomei, then you have also, now you have to also add Shimon HaTzadik's point that we said before, that he may now, b'chlal, regret the fact that he became a nazir. So now he's worse off. He's doing nazir. It's not even anymore, before he was doing it, he was enthusiastic about it or whatever. Now it's just, I gotta get through it.
Three reasons, right?
Two or three, however you look at it, but the point is that would be why the pasuk is stressing it by the case of another tummy, but not to say that the same thing wouldn't apply to another tahar as well, where you just have the one issue, the very fact that he became another in the first place.
What's the kind of potential
analogy? Okay. Where do you see that? Oh, at the end of the Rashi. Is that when you have somebody who already is doing something improper, then you attribute all the other improper things to him. Like this guy who at this point is the point where he became Tomei, which is also for another to do. Okay, he didn't do it on purpose, but still. So once you have somebody who already is messed up like that, somebody who already did the wrong thing, then already here is where is the appropriate place to mention the general concept that any kind of nazir is, that any kind of nazir is a chayt. Mishnah says, now we're going to get to, we learned at the beginning, till now, the two previous Mishnayos, so the first Mishnah and the one that we had yesterday, talked about Yodos of Nazirus, where you make a partial declaration. Now we're going to talk about the first thing that the original Mishnah talked about Tinuyim. We said that Tinuyim are like slang terms, but we'll talk about in the Gemara exactly the details, but they're like other terms for the keywords of a neder. So ha'omer, okay, l'chaveiro is in parentheses, because now we have l'chaveiro, it's what a person says as a neder. Instead of the normal way of saying a neder, as we've discussed, is that a person says, I'm making a neder to bring a carbon, or that this object should be also to me like a carbon. So if instead of the word carbon, he says koinam, or koinach, or koinas, harei l'kinuyim l'carbon. These are all kinuyim for the word carbon. Similarly, cheref, harei l'kinuyim l'cherem. Nozik, Nozik, Noziach, Poziach, Harei, Lekinuim, Nozirus. Each one of them is each group of three that we have over here is a kinui for some other word. Shvusa, shvusa, or shkuka, or and those are for shvura. And here's an interesting one: neder b'moyi. If he makes a neder with moyi, now what does that mean? What's moyi? There's two possibilities that the mafarshim discuss. The Rambam explains that the Aramaic word for shvura is moimsa. Now, there's no question if you make a neder using an appropriate word in some other language, or neder or shvur, there's no question that's effective. So if a person were to say moimsa, then there's no presuming he's an Aramaic speaker, then there's no question it would be valid. According to the Rambam, moihi is a kinui for the word moimsa. The same way as korban gets slurred or mispronounced or whatever into koinam and the other variants are there, and the same way moimsa gets mispronounced as moihi. And therefore it has the same effect, the same moimsa, which in turn is a translation of shvur. So according to the Rambam, you just have, the Mishnah is giving three examples of kinuyim for shvur, two of them based on the Hebrew and one based on the Aramaic.
Do you have to be fluent in the language in which you put it in
there? So that's a discussion among the Rishonim, basically depending on the two opinions that we're going to have in the Gemara over here about where these terms koinam and cherek and the rest of them come from anyway. We're going to have the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan that they come from foreign languages. So then part of the question is why the Mishnah has to mention them, you know, whatever word you have for these in various languages. So yeah, one of the ways of looking at it, the Rambam discusses it at the beginning of the Masechta, is that maybe you have these terms that the Mishnah is giving us are valid whether you speak that language or not. Other foreign terms will be valid only if you speak that particular language. So if you're an English speaker and you say, I vow, for example, you know, then that would be a neder. But if you say whatever the equivalent word is in French, then it might not work. Yeah. That's the other explanation. I only gave one so far. So the one explanation, first of all, from the Rambam is that moihi is a kinui for moimsa. The other explanation is that moihi is a kinui for the word moshe. So what does it mean? It means that the person is saying, I'm making a shvua like the shvua of Moshe Rabbeinu. Where do we find Moshe Rabbeinu made a shvua? It says there that in this week's parasha we have the parting between Moshe and Yisroel way back earlier in the Torah in Parashat Shmos. We have when they first met up, Moshe is living by Yisroel. The pasuk says by Yoyel Moshe Loshevet Sehish that Moshe agreed to live with the man. He married Zipporah, and Rashi explains over there that by Yoyel is also Loshen Shvur. By Yoyel is related to the word Allah, which is another word for shvur. That he swore to Yisrael that he won't leave Midian without his permission. And therefore, later on in Parashat Shmos, when the Ibishah tells him to leave, he tells him you first have to go and get permission from Yisrael when you're going to Mitzrayim.
Oh, okay.
No, the Ibishah told him that you need to go and ask permission from Yisrael to leave.
Allah is like a curse,
but it's similar to. We touched on it before, and the Gemara mentions in Shavuos. The Gemara mentions in Shavuos that the word Allah includes Klala and Allah. The word Shavua, I mean, includes Allah and Klala and various other such concepts. Because they have, for example, when they make a person swear a Shavua in Beis Din, it includes that he's accepting on himself that if he's saying falsely, then he's accepting a curse on himself. By the Soita also you have Shavua. So Allah, the two concepts go together. Anyway. So according to that, the explanation is he's making a shvur, the kind of shvur that Moshe made to Yisrael, that's the kind of shvur I'm making. Which, by the way, there's an interesting thing that Rogachover says on this, that Rebbe used to quote it a number of times. Now, what do we have? Ultimately, Moshe was not doing that shvur, because ultimately he got permission from Yisrael to leave. The Medrash adds also that there was another component to that shvur also. Moshe promised Yisroel that he's not going to make a bris milah for his son, and he's going to raise his son, it's Machlokas, which son, to worship Avodah Zarah. How that could be, why Yisroel would make him swear such a thing is a whole other thing. If we have time, maybe at the end we can discuss a little bit of, but we see at the end Moshe didn't. He did make a bris for his son. And he didn't end up raising any of his children to worship over. Well, he's punished until he made a bris. Yeah. So we see he canceled the shavua in the end. Yet we see that you can use it as a basis. So therefore, the Rogachover says we learn from this something. We learn from this that when you have something that's written in the Torah, even if afterwards the Torah itself thought it was canceled, nevertheless the very fact that it was written in the Torah gives it a certain permanence. And therefore you can use it. And therefore you can use it as a basis for your own shavua, even though his own shavua ended up being canceled.
Yeah.
No, that's neither here nor there. Well, it was. I mean, Moshe himself was a Ben Noach at that point, because before Mandar. Okay, fine, but still.
No, at that time.
Yes, that's what we're talking about. No, we're talking about before. No, that's the thing. Therefore, you can. Therefore. So I don't know what it would be. I don't know what it would be. I mean, a goy doesn't have the same dinim of Nedarim and Shavuos as a Jew anyway, but yeah. Okay, so there's two types. Okay, so there's really three different meanings that the word cherem can have. A person can use it as sort of a synonym for neder, like I'm making this object also to me. It can be that he means, and then there's two types of cherem. Actually, there's something called cherem koyanim and there's something called cherem gavoya or cherem bedek habayis. We'll talk about them more extensively in the next parak. Cherme koyanim, the rule is that you declare an object cherem for the koyanim means you have to give it to the koyanim. You can't redeem it, you can't nothing, the only thing you can do is give it to them. As soon as you give it to them, it becomes holin. Therefore, if a person can declare an object to be cherme koyanim, fine, but if a person were to say, this object is also to me like cherme koyanim, it wouldn't have an effect. Because it would be saying, this thing is also to me like this piece of paper. It's not something that's also. It's not something that's also, and therefore you can't be machdis in it. On the other hand, if a person can declare something to be cherme gavoya, which then cherme gavoya is like any other hektish, it has to be given to the treasury of the Beis HaMikdash, and then they use it for the upkeep and the maintenance of the Beis HaMikdash. Once they go and sell it to the highest bidder, yeah, it becomes cholin. But up until that point, it's hektish. The difference is there is a kula in it compared to cherme koyanim, namely that you can be poydeh. You can redeem it. You yourself can buy it back from hektish. Unlike you can't buy it back from the koyanim until you actually give it to them with the cherme koyanim. So yeah, the Ran discusses over here briefly that there is a difference. We're going to learn in the next parak. There's actually a difference. If you just say cherem plain, there's a difference whether you're living in Eretz Yehuda, the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, or the Galil, the northern part.
Today?
No, they were talking about in those days. In those days, there weren't very many Kohanim living in the Galil. I guess the idea was most of them lived in Yehuda so that they'd be available to come to the Beis Mikdash when it's their turn. Therefore, if a person just says Cherem in the Galil without specifying, then he probably means Cherem Gavoya. He probably means Cherem for Bedek Abayis. Which, therefore, if he were to say now, this food is also to me like Cherem, since cherme bedek habayis is something which is also hana, then yeah, the food becomes also to him. It's a proper neder. As opposed to, if he were to say specifically cherme koyanim, then nothing happens. If he says this food is also like cherme koyanim, because cherme koyanim are not also to you, and you have to give them to the koyan, but they're not per se also. They're not an object. No, you can't eat them because you have to give them to the koyan, but they're not an object. They're not an object that's per se also, because the moment you give them to the koyan, they become cholin. Unlike hektish, you give it
to everybody, but to no, the Kohen they are.
That's not the point. The point is that intrinsically they're chulin. Intrinsically they're chulin. They just have to be given to the Kohen. As opposed to hektish, which is intrinsically hektish. Okay, in Yehuda it's the other way around. In Yehuda most of the Kohen live there, so therefore if you say cherem there, unspecified, it probably means cherem Kohen. Well, that we'll talk about more extensively in the next paragraph. The point is, our Mishnah mentioned cherem, so yeah, there's those three possibilities. It's either you're declaring this object to be cherem koyanim, or you're declaring this object to be cherem hektish, or you're saying this object is also like a cherem, and then it depends which type of cherem you're talking about.
Either
cherem or bedek habayis, as the case may be. Either way, if you say cheret or cheret or whatever, then yeah. Okay. So those last three, Shvosa, Shkuka, and B'moihi, are all kinui for Shvua. Why the Mishnah uses the word Noidu, by the way, over here is another bit of a discussion. One thing is that the Ran talks about on Ahmed Bey's is one thing is if it just said B'moihi by itself is that might not be enough. Actually, you can't swear by Moshe. Moshe himself is not a dover hanodur. It's not something that you can declare hektish. Therefore, you would have to be saying, I'm swearing by Moshe's shvur. And therefore, to clarify that, the Mishnah added the word nodar. Yeah. So as opposed to, for example, a person says, for example, shvusa, that I won't do this, then it counts as a shvur. But if he says, b'moihi, that I won't do this, then it doesn't count. You would have to say, b'shvur d'moihi. Or words to that effect, whatever. And that's one possibility. That's one possibility. The other possibility that Ran talks about is there might be a difference whether he says just plain Mohi or whether he says Bimohi, which implies, one implies that he's swearing using Moshe himself, the other one implies that he's swearing using Moshe's neder. Okay. So where do we get these Kinuyim from? Gitmar, so they had a discussion among the Amoraim. Kinuyim, Rabbi Yochanan on the Lashon Humasein. Rabbi Yochanan says, but they come from foreign languages. Rav Shimon Lakish Shami Loshin Shabadu Lahem Chamim Yis No Devoy. Rav Shimon says, Rav Shimon Lakish, Rish Lakish says that these are expressions that the Chamim themselves created, yeah, that people should use them for Nedarim. V'chein Huayim, V'chodesh HaShabadu Mimliba. And what I mean Shabadu is we have an example that says by Yeravam, the Yomtov that he made up out of his own heart. So we see that Badu means to come up with something on your own, to invent something on your own. Now, the time of my Takinu Rabbanon Kinuyim, so why did the Rabbanon, according to Rosh Lakish, why would they make up these Kinuyim? Okay, even according to Rabbi Yochanan, why would the Chachamim specifically mention this list of Kinuyim? The reason is, Deloy Lema Karban, because the Chachamim did not want that a person should say the word Karban. Okay, the question is, why not? Lema Karban, what's wrong with saying Karban? The answer is, Duma Oma Karban LaShem, because he might not just say Karban, he might say Karban LaShem. So, the Lema Karban LaShem, what's the problem with that? This is, we talked about this the other day. Dilma Oma LaShem V'Lema Karban. Instead of saying Karban LaShem, he might flip it around and say LaShem Karban. Then he might say the word LaShem. He might not say the word Karban, either because he might change his mind halfway through or because he might die. But come up with Shem Shemayim V'Latola, and then he used Hashem's name in vain. Yeah, as we talked about. And there's an interesting thing that they discussed, you know, by the Kohen Gadol, we learned back in Yuma about when the Kohen Gadol make the lottery on the two Seirim over there, the Sar LaShem and the Sar LaZazel, what happens when he picks up the one that's supposed to go for the Chatas, that's supposed to be LaShem, he picks it up and says, LaShem Chatas. So there he does say the word LaShem first. So how is that? It contradicts what we're saying over here. There's a few different answers. The Torah Pesushanim over there says that that's how the Pasuk says it, so that's how you have to do it. But, the Pasuk actually says, LaShem Chatos. This is so there's a lot of different other answers, one of them being that we're talking about the problem is that he might change his mind. Fine, the Kohen Gadol is not going to change his mind halfway through. The problem that he might not be Zori is that he might say LaShem and never get around to saying Karban. Fine, that's also not Kohenim's Jewish name. The Kohenim are careful about these things. There's an opinion over there anyway in the Mishnah that all he has to say is LaShem, that he didn't have to say Chatos. So therefore, according to that, it works out even better. He can just say LaShem. Here, if he says LaShem and never says Karban, then he's used Hashem's name for nothing. There, if he says LaShem, at least he has accomplished, he has declared it that it's Karban.
It's
Karban. Yeah, right. Okay. So therefore,
it's a yacht over there, isn't it?
No, it wouldn't be considered a yacht. No, if he just says LaShem.
Yeah.
No, I mean, according to one Tana in the Mishnah over there, Rabbi Shmuel, I think, that's what he does. When he should say LaShem, but if he says LaShem, it would probably be good enough. Okay, anyway, the point is that the point is with all of these expressions that we have kinuyim for, when it comes to Karban, you have the word Karban LaShem in the Pasuk. Cherem is called Cherem Kodesh Kodashim Hu LaShem. Neder, the same thing, Ishki Yudav Neder LaShem. Shavuot is also Shavuot Hashem. So with all these things, the Chachamim were concerned that you use the real word, then you'll combine Hashem's name with it, and then you may end up putting Hashem's name first, and you have this problem. So like this, if you use a kinui instead, if you say Kainam, that's not going to lead you to say, you're not going to think to say Kainam LaShem or LaShem Kainam, because the word Kainam is not ever associated with Hashem's name.
Theoretically,
you could, but it's not associated. It's not going to trip off your tongue the next thing. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Shimon Omer, Minayin Shalayim Adam LaShem Ola LaShem Mincha LaShem Toda LaShem Shlomim. Now, how do we know a person should not say LaShem first by any of these things? Talmud Lema Korban LaShem. That's why the Pasuk uses the expression that a person declares a Korban for Hashem. And Rabbi Shimon continues, V'kava Chomer, U'mazeh Shalayiskavan Ola Hazgir Shem Shemayim Ala Korban. This case where the person wants to mention Hashem's name for a valid purpose in order to declare a Korban, and yet Amr Torah Korban LaShem LaTala, and therefore yet the Torah says that better you should say Korban LaShem in that order, so that you don't end up using Hashem's name in vain. Allah is Kama Vakama. I misparsed that. Amr Torah Korban LaShem LaTala. Then when it comes to saying Hashem's name in vain, Allah is Kama Vakama, that it's wrong to do that. And so therefore, again, since you have the problem that people would flip things around, and instead of Korban LaShem or Shavuah LaShem or whatever, they'd flip it around and say LaShem Korban or LaShem Shavuah or whatever, so the Chachamim found it necessary to, according to Rish Lakish, to create these kinuyim.
What's my reasoning of Shem's name in the speech?
No.
You're not making the bracha.
But that's the thing. But no, we're not talking about the Shem, of course. That you can only use in the Bismikdash. Right. But even Adnai or like Kim or whatever, yeah, you're not supposed to use it casually. Yeah, I mean, so if you end up saying Lashem Korban or Korban Lashem, fine, you've said it. You've at least used it for a valid purpose. But what if the person says Lashem and then you know what? Wait a minute, what do I want to talk about? I don't want to declare this a Korban. Now he's used Hashem's name for no good reason.
It's a bit like in a Kriya. You're not supposed to. You finish a pasuk once you said.
There is that, right? Yeah.
And Lashem is the same as Hashem.
No. Not, we're not talking about you say the actual word Hashem. We're talking about that you say La Day or Leiloi or whatever. You know. Yeah.
That's the same thing with a lamet or whatever.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, in Hilchos Sefer Torah, there's a difference between the letters that come before Hashem's name and the letters that come after. That, yeah, the letters before Hashem's name can be erased, the letters after Hashem's name can't. But in speech, there's no real difference. Okay. Lema Katanoi, the Gemara says, should we say that this argument between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, where these Kinoim come from,
Why would we ask this question? Is the same
as a Machlokas Tanoim. Well, we always ask that question because the Gemara, first of all, doesn't like to assume that the Tanoim are arguing, that the Amoraim are arguing something that the Tanoim already argued about, especially in this case it's the Shammai and Bishilol, and we know that the Halacha is nearly always like Bishilol. So if we're going to say that one of them holds like Bishammai, then you have a problem. Why would he say that when he knows perfectly well the Halacha is not like Bishammai? So what does a Braisa says, Bishammai, I mean, Kinuye Kinuyin Asurin. We said in the Mishnah that kinuyim are also, so if a person says, for example, koinam instead of korban, then it's good, it works as a neder. But if he uses a kinui of the kinui, so a further transformation of the word koinam, which we'll give example soon, then Bishamai holds that it still is also, it still works as a neder, it still works. Or Bishalim, kinuyi kinurin mutarin, whereas Bishilo says that if you transform it that much, then it's mutar. Now, my law, meaning it's not a neder. We're going to give examples soon, where, for example, we take the nouns from our Mishnah, like koinim or whatever, and turn them into verbs. There was an old comic strip, I think Calvin and Hobbes or something, who once it, where he wants verbing weird language. Like when you take nouns and turn them into verbs, then it makes language weird. So here we're going to have examples. You're taking nouns and turning them into verbs. So anyway, my lab, shouldn't we assume that it's like this? Manda Oma Kinuya Kinuya Nasurin, the Shammai who hold that even Kinuya Kinuyim work, that they're still also as a neder, Kisava, Kinuyim Lashon Omasein. Evidently, they hold that the Kinuyim themselves come from foreign languages, so therefore, yeah, just like any word in a foreign language can be declined, put into different tenses and whatever, so can these. So if the word koinam comes from some foreign language, then yes, it can be turned into a verb or into a different tense or whatever, just like a word in any other language.
Why are we learning from the, from what the Goyim do there in the dark? What do we think about that?
It's the other way around. I mean, even when we say over here these are Lashon Omasein, it's still what it would be is that these would be words that originally came from Lashon Kodesh and were adopted in a corrupt form into the languages of the surrounding nations. So for example, you know, they heard about the concept of a korban, so they borrowed the term, but they borrowed it in a corrupt way. And the Chachamim felt that it's a good idea to use those instead of the original word korban for the reasons that we talked about before.
Even if that's the difference, according to
Rabbi Yochanan's way of looking at it, what we're saying is they started out of corrupt Hebrew, but now these are full fledged words in the other languages.
It went from corrupt Hebrew to becoming a proper word,
and that happens all the time. Languages borrow words from each other, and then they mispronounce them or whatever, and eventually they become naturalized. And you can look at any number of examples in English. That hasn't changed very much from the original, but if you had to take just one example, consider for example the way that English has borrowed a word from French three times with three different meanings: gentle, jaunty, and gentil, and each of them has a different meaning. So that's how it is. Yeah, Gentiles. And actually, I don't know if that comes from the same root, but yeah. Anyway, whatever it is. So you have, a word gets borrowed into another language, mispronounced, and eventually it becomes a part of that language. Yeah. So anyway, so the vort is, again, according, it would seem that Mishamai is saying that since these are words from other languages, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying, then good, they can be declined just like any word in a language. But it doesn't matter. Once they're adopted into some other language, they become, yeah. Ulamanda amam mutarim, whereas the one with Hillel who says that it's mutar, kasav aloshim shabadu lahan chachamim. They would hold that these are terms that the chachamim themselves invented. Therefore, they're not necessarily meant to be declined. They're not necessarily meant to be used grammatically. They're used as independent words. They're not meant to be prefixed and suffixed and turned into verbs and so forth. So then it would seem that Rabbi Yochanan agrees with Bishamai, going according to Bishamai, and Rish Lakish is going according to Bishamai. The answer is Loi, the Kula Alma Kinurim Loshanom, saying no, everybody might agree that, everybody, both Bishamai and Bishamai might agree that that these words are Lashon Omis, they're from foreign languages. The difference is, if it's Shamash Shavri Bahani Nami Mishtari Omis, Bishamai would figure that the same way as the Goyim would use words like Koinam, the same way they would use words like Koinam that are turned into verbs, These same goyim would use one just as much as the other. Or with Silo Savri, where the Silo holds up, Hani Lo Mishtari Omis. No, the goyim will use the original word koinam. They're not going to turn it into a verb, or the various other transformations that we'll talk about soon.
They're American. They probably will.
Okay. The Boisim, or another possibility, Bishama is. It's not a question of where the words come from originally. It's rather. Bishamai Savig does Rinin Kinuya Kinuya Mishum Kinuyan. Bishamai figure is fine. Technically, yes, only Kinuyim should be valid Nadarim. But we're going to make a Zera about Kinuya Kinuyim because you might confuse them with the actual Kinuyim. If you're going to tell me that a verb form of the word koinam is not a valid neder, people might think the word koinam itself is not a valid neder either. But the Gemara is going to give a line in a minute. Mekanamna, for example, where you take the word koinam and turn it into a verb. I am koinaming. Let's say to say it in English. Yeah. So Bishamai figures if you're going to say I am koinaming is not a valid neder, then you might think that koinam itself is not a valid neder either, and it is. Or Bishil Sabri Legazun Kinuyin Mishum Kinuyin. Whereas Bishil is not concerned about that.
There's not a lot of
knowledge. The halacha is like Bishil, that usually is. Okay, so what do we mean by kinuya kinuyim? Tony Rabbi Yosef, for example, mekanamna, for example, you take the word koinam and turn it into a verb. I am koinaming. Mekanachna, you take koinach from the Mishnah and turn it into a verb. Mekanachna, yeah. Okay, yeah, well, it's not related to the word knas, it's related to the word koinos of our Mishnah. You know, when we say in Kol Nidre, we mention some of these in Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre, Ve'esare, Ushvoi, Ve'charame, Ve'koiname, Ve'kinuse. And then we say Ve'kinuye, meaning all the other possible kinuyim. So kinuse does not come from the word knas. Kinuse is the word koinas from our Mishnah. Yeah, it's just the plural of it. Yeah. Okay, Hechidami kinuye, kinuyin de cherem. What are kinuye of the word for cherem? So we have three examples of kinuyim for cherem in the Mishnah. Tani Makshah, so Makshah is the name of an Amora, taught a Braisa that gives an example. For example, the person says, Charakim, Charakim, Charakim. He pluralizes it. Actually, Hagoros Habach adds that actually instead of just Charakim, then he adds an extra letter, Tachrakim. He has a test over there. Okay, Kinuyi Kinuyin Dinazira. Well, then it doesn't mean anything. That's what we're saying. It's too far removed from the original word
Chayim.
Or Charakim. So if he had said this object is Cherek, for example, then fine. It becomes Cherem, whatever that means. But if he says Charakim, then that doesn't count. According to Bishil, according to Bishamai, it would. Kinuyi Kinuyin Dinazirus. What's an example by Nazirus? Turn it up, Yosef. Machzakna, Manzakna, Mafichna. Machzichna, really, it should be. Again, where you're taking the three, you have the three words from our Mishnah, the three kinuyim for Nazirus, Nazik, Naziach, Poziach. So again, he takes each one of them and turns it into a verb. Okay, Ibayilahu. So now they had a question. Mifazachna mai, mifachazna mai. What if the person takes the word poziach, and he takes the word poziach, not only he turns it into a verb, but he also flips around two of the letters. Poziach has the zayin before the ches. So now instead of saying mifzachna, which would be the verb form of poziach, he flips around the ches and the zayin. So now he has mifachazna. Or mischaznamai, same thing. What if he does the same kind of thing with the word nazviach from the Mishnah? Misaznamai, all of these are some similar idea, where you're taking the word from the Mishnah, you're turning it into a verb, and you're flipping around two of the root letters.
It's still valid?
That's the question. That do we consider that, according to Bishamai, who says that kinuya kinuyan or aser, is that still considered kinuya kinuyan? Or according to Bishamai, would even they say, you know, enough already? There's a limit how far you can corrupt the word and still have it be considered a valid matter. By the way, a number of the Meforshim discussed the question. If the halacha is not like Bishamai anyway, why is the Gemara spending a half a block over here discussing about kinuyim anyway? Yeah, I mean the halacha is not like them. Finished. One answer is the Radvaz says it still is relevant according to Basilil, because fine, Basilil is saying kinuyim, kinuyim are not. But Basilil agrees that kinuyim are still valid, obviously it says in the Mishnah. So for example, according to Basilil, suppose that a person were to take the word Naziach from our Mishnah, or not even Naziach, let's say the person takes the original word Nazir from our Mishnah. He turns it into a verb and flips around two of the letters. So the only thing he hasn't done, he hasn't replaced the original word nazir with one of the kinuyim, such as naziach or koziach or whatever. But other than that, he does the same transformations that we're saying over here. He turns it into a verb and he flips around two of the letters. If you're going to say that the three transformations are still considered something valid according to Bishamai, then two transformations might be valid according to Bishamai, as long as it's still recognizably based on the original word. Or maybe not, therefore the Gemara has to deal with it. Okay, but the Hilchos Sotah Mashiach, the Gemara doesn't do such things. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Yeah, no. Okay. Some other examples, the Gemara asks, Amalei Ravina L'Ravashi, Kinma Mai. What if a person, instead of using the word Koinam, uses the word Kinma? Do we say Koinam, comma? Does it mean that he means it just as a variation of the word Koinam? Or Duma, Kinman Besen, comma? Or maybe, by the word Kidma, maybe he's referring to kinman besem, a type of spice that was used for the Torah. Now, kinman besem, it's one of the spices that was used in the Torah, in the Shemana Mishra. Yeah, The point is, just like if a person were to say, for example, I'm making a neder using this bottle of seltzer, it doesn't have an effect. The same way, if a person were to make a neder using kinman besem, it has no effect. So if a person says kinma, what is it? Is it a form of the word koinam, and therefore it's a valid neder, or is it a form of the word kinman besem, and then it's nothing? Because if I make a neder, the seltzer is also to me, fine, then it's also to me.
Yeah.
But if I say, this object should be also to me like the seltzer, nothing happens. Yeah, I have to be makas drava nader, or something that's capable of being also by my declaration, yeah.
If you say this object, it means nothing?
Right. So, but also, yeah, I mean, also, I mean, yeah. So,
this subject is nothing.
No, but it's also, we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah, we're going to have examples of the next Mishnah, that if a person makes a neder based on a korban, that he says that I'm making a neder on a korban, then whatever it is that he's saying in the neder is valid. But again, if he says I'm making a neder based on this table or whatever, then it's not. So it still becomes important.
What kind of neder would you make on a carbon, but it's not used carbon?
No, you're making a neder, like we said, similar to what we said before about Moshe. Like, I'm swearing by this carbon that such and such, let's say. By a carbon, it works, but if I say I'm swearing by this table, nothing happens. So same thing when it comes to here. If he says I'm swearing or I'm making a neder by a spice, nothing happens. But if he says I'm swearing by a koinam, then the koinam is a valid neder. Similarly, Amalei Rav Acha Breder Rav Chiya Rav Ashi, Kina Mai, what if he says the word Kina instead? Kina Shaltana Golan Kama, does he mean a nest of chickens, a Dumalosh and a Kainam? Or maybe again, Kina maybe is a variation, the word Kainam. Okay, so all of them are Tiboy. All of them, Tiboy, again, we said like the other day, is the Nedarim is equivalent to Teiku, it means that all of them are left unresolved. There is a machloikus among the early Achronim. Ma'arit talks about this, for example, whether context is enough to infer these things. Whether maybe if you have what we talked about the other day, yad she'enim echiach, a yad that by itself maybe is not definitive, but based on the context, based on the surrounding circumstances, you could then would that work or not? I mean, but there still has to be some kind of expression of a neder. The point is, if a person makes a neder by a table, there's no question; it's nothing, no matter what the context is, and even if it's blatantly obvious that he meant to be a valid neder. Yeah. No, he says, I'm not going to eat challah. Again, that's what we talked about the other day. Is it that he's, well, if he says, I'm not going to eat, that's sure. But if he says, this challah is osur, we talked about the other day. Everybody agrees if he says this challah is osur, then it's osur. Then no, then it is osur. The question is that because that works as a yad, that really the full thing to say would have been, this is osur to me just like a korban? Or is it that either one of those is an equally full form of a neder? Either way, yeah. I mean, but But again, you know, we're talking about as opposed to if a person makes a neder based on something that has no kedusha to it at all, or something that's not a dover or neder at all, or, then it's worthless. Yeah. So that's why we have to know. For example, when he used the word kinma, did he mean spices or did he mean a kohen? When he said kinma, did he mean a chicken coop or did he mean I saw, by the way. I mean, you know, we're talking over here as a person maybe swearing by spices or chicken coop or what have you. We're gonna have examples later on in the sect also where I saw something about this actually, that it was actually a very common thing among the goyim in those days to swear by anything that came to hand. They'd swear by a dog, or they'd swear by a net, or by, you know, anything that they saw. I swear by this, by, you know, whatever this object is, that such and such. So that sort of thing may have percolated among the Jewish people also, and therefore the Chachamim have to explain to us that it doesn't count. Well, nowadays people don't usually swear by objects. People just say, I swear to God that whatever, you know, which is not any better. That's worse. That's using Hashem's name. But yeah. It becomes a problem sometimes. I mean, technically, al pi halacha, that's why, in certain, to a certain extent, the Jew is not supposed to be in partnership with a goy, precisely for that reason.